Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
We will employ an exciting, fast, explosive, and diverse offense combined with a physical, punishing, relentless, suffocating defense.
Purdy rolls right, looking to throw, but Ito gives chase, comes back left. Purdy still looking, sets up, ball's loose, rolling around in Iowa State territory. Redmond picked it up. Redmond on the run. Redmond scores.
All right, guys, welcome to the Oklahoma Breakdown Podcast, brought to you guys by SB Nation's Crimson and Cream Machine. I'm your host this evening, Kami Amarabian. I'm joined by Stephen Brown. Stephen, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a pretty good night with the Thunder getting the second overall pick. I will say,
it's a surprise. I'm happy.
Oh yeah, no, everyone knows I'm a Thunder hater. I hate Presti, but I was going into this thing thinking they were going to have the sixth pick no matter what. Like, that's just that's what's going to happen. That's what happens to OKC Thunder. Come in, get the second pick. I think things are looking up now.
But, yeah, see,
that's here, a brighter outlook.
The whole cynical outlook, because, like, I'm a cynicist as well, and it's like, look, now that things aren't as bad as I thought they were going to be, I'm a much happier person, which, like
Presti's bad.
You put your, like, self-through
anguish.
Like,
second pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I torture myself every day
through all this anguish, like this, gonna get the second pick, the sixth pick, but then just to get the second pick is even better. And are also joined by, and Seth, we've podcasted before, and I'm pretty sure I have your last name right, and I hope I don't say it wrong in the podcast, but we're joined also by Seth Oliveras. Did I say it right?
Oh, you said it perfect.
Fantastic. How are you doing, man?
Oh man, I'm doing really well, and actually today, as of 12, maybe 15, officially started spring break after a first year of grad school down. So it was really stressful this last couple of weeks, but man, it feels good.
I feel you. Yeah. I also wrapped up first semester doctoral stuff. Like, dude, papers, lots of papers. I love papers, but college athletes also love papers, but they like the green ones, not the white ones. So let's talk about those college athletes. Let's talk about the defense, man. Brent Venables, one of the biggest, and actually I was approached by a couple of people just the other day talking about, like, in, of course, people that listen to the podcast know I'm a teacher. And I was approached by a couple of high school coaches that know, like, you know, like we have a podcast and everything, and that I'm a part of Crimson and Cream Machine and everything. And they're like, what do you think about the team realistically? Because you have your sunshine pumpers, you have your rose colored glasses. What is your realistic expectation for this team? And Seth, since you haven't been on the podcast for a long time, we've only podcasted once. I want to get your unfiltered take. What is your ceiling and floor for this football team going into the fall?
Oh, yeah. So I guess just to start off record-wise, I think the floor, I could see – I'm going to go 7-5, honestly. And I think the homer in me wants to say 8-4 as a floor. But I'll say 7-5 just because – there are a lot of games that really honestly could be toss-ups depending on how certain units are developing over the season. But as far as a ceiling goes, I do believe this team could win 10 games regular season. Like, it's doable for sure. Mm-hmm. And with that, I think if that happens, if they go 10-2, I do see them, you know, playing for a little bit more postseason-wise.
Steven, what do you think about that?
Y'all raised the floor a little bit. I'll go with the 8-4. I don't see a lot of teams in the Big 12 at this point in time where they're just head and shoulders above Oklahoma, both from, a coaching standpoint as well as a talent standpoint. I mean, Texas is always going to have a majority of that talent, but you look at teams like Iowa State's rebuilding, Baylor's getting a little bit of a rebuild, something like that. So those are games where Oklahoma's had trouble just because those are veteran teams. Those aren't veteran teams anymore. So I think 8-4 is a pretty reasonable floor for them.
And so, so that's what I said. I said, I think, maybe bottom out 8 wins, possibility of 7, that game in Nebraska is going to tell us a lot. What I came down to, I was like, the offense is easy to learn. This offense is not a difficult offense to learn. The route tree is not hard to learn. I mean, it's pretty simplistic in understanding it. It's getting your athletes out in space. It's like flipping it, basically. The defense, from what I said to both of these people, was that it was the defensive learning growth. It was their learning curve. How can they go from looking at their wrist, knowing my one absolute fucking job for this one play, and then go to, all right, I need to be here or here or here, depending upon where this offensive player is moving, but also what the call already is, because the call could be like several things in one thing. Like people don't realize Brent Venables' defense is so multiple that you get zone looks and you end up in man. You end up in man, you get zone looks, and you create like all this chaos by bringing more bodies than are necessary. And like that's what causes all these turnovers, and that's why he has the number one defense, is because he's consistently done that. But then after a while, got really, 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 really high quality players, to the fact that he didn't start to really have to blitz anymore. It came to as a stunts and twists on the line were enough. And so what is keeping, and Seth, I'm going to come back to you, what is keeping Oklahoma from their ceiling, in your opinion? Like, is it that learning growth on that learning curve on defense, or is it a combination of all of those things because there's a new coaching staff in place?
I think for me, I'm looking more towards the defense. I think there's going to be a really steep learning curve for the defense, especially up front. And I think while there are definitely the guys that can get it done already on the team, with so much that's changing on that side of the ball, or at least that we expect to change on that side of the ball, there might be some of those rumbles early in the season, mid-season, where they might see some high-scoring games where the offense is really going to have to kind of carry the team for a bit, and fans are going to, I can already anticipate fans wondering, like, well, we hired Venables, to make this defense better, make this team tougher, and what are we doing getting in these shootouts? I can just see something like that happening. So if this team's not going to reach its ceiling, I think it's going to be because there are going to be some games that the defense just kind of lets get away in the, later in the games.
If UTEP drops 21 on Oklahoma, are the fans losing their minds?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to take much, honestly, for the fans to lose their minds. So it's like, yeah, it's just, I mean, from what I've seen over the last 6 years that I've been on social media.
Steven, same question. What's keeping the Sooners from their floor to their ceiling?
Yeah, you have to look at the learning curve on defense. Guys getting in the right position. You go back and look at the spring game. You kind of look at that nickel position. Guys are, one, two steps behind, on their breaks, guys out of place. But at the same time, you have a lot of talent there and guys that have played a lot of football. So maybe that mitigates a little bit of that learning curve just from some experience from the standpoint of there. But I think also you look at the quarterback position and just how far Dillon Gabriel is going to take this team on offense, because really the offense is going to be based on his arm. Like, I don't think it's overly complicated. It's not a Lincoln Riley offense, and even Lincoln's offense wasn't that complicated. But it's going to be up to him to kind of move the sticks.
That's fair. And then this is something we all agree on. Like, a lot of it is that learning curve on both really the offense, like it's easier to understand, and it's also wonderful to have Gabriel being an extension of Lebby on the field since he was previously coached by him. It's really just, can he get the ball to the guys, and also is the offensive line doing their job? But I think a lot of us are concerned, you know, you go from having simplistic defensive calls to who was it? Who, I can't remember who they were talking to. I think it might have been Kendall Dennis, maybe Woody Washington the other day, or DJ Graham. I don't know, one of the defensive backs. They were asking him about the defense, and he was like, we keep on getting 5 to 6 new plays every single week. Like, this is not something that they're used to and that they're having to learn. And so when the spring game was happening, Venables was on the freaking field with the mic telling the defense where to be. Like, that's how steep this learning curve is for the defense. That's going to be so significant going into the season and getting to that Texas game. And that's why I'm so interested in seeing that Nebraska game. And so going on to the defense, some starters I think we could probably agree on, you know, Jalen Redmond, Jeffrey Johnson, probably some Reggie Grimes and Ethan Downs. Are those your front four?
Say those again.
So edge to edge, let's go Ethan Downs, Jeff Johnson, Redmond, and Grimes.
That sounds about right. I think Jordan Kelly probably works his way in there at some point. I think they're going to rotate quite a bit in the middle, but those two ends sound right, with Stripling kind of maybe interchanging with Grimes a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I think, and you mentioned Stripling, that's where I was going to go to just add on to that. But yeah, that sounds like a pretty solid, safe bet for the starting line.
And that's the thing that's really interesting about Venables is, and I mentioned this on previous podcast, of course, he's going to tailor his defense to what personnel he has, but also what offensive personnel is also in the league. So obviously, when you're at Clemson, they just didn't have the bodies. He knew he had three defensive linemen that he could depend on, so he went to John Haycock and was like, hey, teach me this 3-3-5, this umbrella defense that gives Lincoln Riley so much trouble. And then so he's not averse to bringing that rush edge up to the and not just in having a traditional 4-3 that everybody immediately gets in their mind, or a 4-2-5. The most it's not the most interesting, I guess, because that's kind of really defensive backs, like really where are you putting people? With the new transfers in mind, linebackers, I've seen stuff from Deshaun White and Danny Stutzman to David Igwebu to Stutzman. Where are you guys at on linebackers from the Will and the Mike? Because I've seen so many different ways in which, first of all, how they were used in spring and in practice, but also B, what. Like, I've seen so many iterations of what the linebackers starting to, if they are running a 4-2-5, what that would look like, acknowledging, like you just said, having Stripling maybe probably be at that rush edge position. Well, where would you put the Will? Who's playing at the Will? Who's playing at the Mike?
Yeah, I think the Mike. I mean, you look at, you'd think Stutzman would slide over there. I didn't really see him play the Mike too much. And maybe that's just because Deshaun White is just playing that much better. I mean, I've never been a huge Deshaun White believer, but in the spring game, he definitely looked like a new player. So I think they probably stick with that experience there while Danny Stutzman kind of gets his brain wrapped around a new system, but he's also pretty young, and Deshaun White has played a lot of football. So I would lean with those two on a 4-2-5.
What about you, Seth?
Yeah, I agree about Deshaun White. I think it looks like he's kind of maybe taking that next step. Even if it's just a half step forward, that's going to be good for him at the weak side. But Mike, I'm really high on Stutzman. I think we might see kind of a rotation between him and Igwebu, even though I think Stutzman should be the guy, and I think he will end up taking it for himself and kind of really claiming it. Probably before September's over, honestly. So I really think we'll see Danny kind of really shine in that Mike position.
Do you think that OU sees Jaron Kanick in more than four games this year, Seth?
That's a good question. Honestly, I kind of hope so, because I from everything I'm reading about him and hearing about him, it just sounds like he's such a freak, and I want to see him get as many reps in his first season of college, even if it's mostly on special teams. But, like, I mean, I would love it if he has an opportunity to get in as many games as possible. If we're in November and he's only played two or three games still, then I think at that point you'd probably just go ahead and just keep it at four max. But if he's, you know, he comes out against Kent State and is the next game, is second week Nebraska? Who's his game? Or who? No, it's UTEP and then.
Yeah, then Nebraska. Yeah.
And then, okay, so yeah, but if through those first three games, if he's getting appearances and he's looking like, you know, he's looking like he's kind of been billed as, I say just keep rolling him out there, any opportunities that he can get, because I think a guy like him could probably mature really quickly just because he's kind of coming in so, I think, ahead of where most guys at that spot would be.
Yeah, and the stuff I've seen on him is just incredible. Even in, like, camp video, the dude, even if, like, there was one specific play on a drill, really, that he slipped and he was still able to get his feet underneath him in the recovery time and in an agility, quick burst speed, catch right back up with a running back. It was just that's something that Oklahoma linebackers haven't had on the edge for a minute. And that could be really special. Steven, the question I asked was, do you see the possibility of Jaron Kanick playing more than four games and not taking a redshirt?
Oh, yeah. You know, he's obviously young, doesn't have a lot of experience in the system. Not a lot of players do at this point. But physically, I mean, you look at him, I think, was it Broyles playing the other nickel in the screen game?
Yeah.
you're going to take Kanick every time. And Broyles is great kid, great leader, but Kanick just gives you something else on the field. He's just got some juice to him. He's going to make some mistakes, and you're going to have to live with that. But I think if you're looking for the most upside, you get Kanick going early and often.
Yeah, it's just really interesting because he was such a dynamic playmaker, and I imagine, like, of course, the Clemson fans were pissed, and I imagine Dabo was obviously, like, pissed, but, like, in a Southern Baptist way. I don't know what that looks like. and so I guess my last question about this is, and I'll come to you first, Steven, is because – Brent Venables does not have the type of bodies that he on the defensive line that he's used to having at Clemson, especially these last however many years they put all these people in the draft. Do you think Brent is going to have to blitz more, or Roof, if you want to say that, if you want to say Roof is the actual defensive coordinator, do you think they actually have to blitz more because they lack that presence up front with just getting pressure with four guys?
I don't think that's the reason. I do think they'll blitz more, and I think that's just because that's going to be the strength of this defense. And also, you know, we saw with Alex Grinch's defense, when they started blitzing, they just dominated games up front. You look at this personnel, you know, this year, not as dynamic, not as explosive, but you have some bodies there that can give offensive lines, especially in the Big 12, a lot of trouble. So I think they'll blitz, but I think they'll do it because that's going to be the strength of their defense, but the weakness of other offenses.
Seth, same question.
Yeah, I think we're going to see, and it's going to look on the field, it's going to look like OU's blitzing a lot more just because they, versus last year and really under Lincoln Riley, Alex Grinch, and such, the comparison is going to be night and day, I feel like, as far as blitzing goes. We're going to see a lot more blitzes on, you know, kind of irregular downs and things like that, and not just the typical passing down and third down kind of a deal. Like, I think we're going to see a lot more kind of nuanced looks at that. So, yeah, compared to what we've been seeing over the last few years, will be a lot more blitzes. But as far as what it could look like once Brent Venables gets those kinds of bodies up front and in the trenches, like you talked about, it'll be interesting, because if he indeed gets those kinds of guys, which they're already working on that, if those guys are doing what they were doing at Clemson, yeah, really wouldn't need the blitz as much. So it'll be interesting to look back on in a few years from now.
I remember Brent Venables' defense being characterized as you have to just like keep the chaos at bay just enough for the quarterback to give him time. And so that's what I expect them to do, because I mean, like, in order for Woody Washington and all those dudes in the back end to be successful, they're going to need some guys to get pressure up front. And I'm a little bit worried about Ethan Downs being a little bit undersized as a defensive end. I don't know how much muscle he's actually packed on this spring or summer, but I imagine they want to add more this summer. So that's one of my a little bit of my concerns, is just being a little bit small on the edges on that, but in the middle, I'm not really that worried. But let's talk a little recruiting. We haven't really touched on this a little bit from the portal. First of all, several names. And several, one of them really special, a special name that'll hold near and dear to my heart. But let's just out him. So when I saw General Booty's name, I immediately thought of John David Booty, despite the fact that it was, where can I get a Booty, OU Booty jersey right now? I need that jersey. I don't know what number it would be. But I just need a Booty jersey. But I wondered if he was like, I was like, hey, that reminds me of John David Booty. And it turns out, like, I guess it's his nephew. So that kind of fits along that path. But so let's talk about it. Seth, what was your reaction when it came out that OU had a committed JUCO quarterback named General Booty?
Yeah, well, I remember it reminded me that I had heard of this guy. I guess, I don't know, it was probably his junior or senior year of high school, just because of his name. And people were talking about, oh, there's this recruit out there named General Booty. And so, and I totally forgot about him. I guess I didn't really realize what he had done with his career thus far. So when I saw that it was official that OU was going to add General Booty to its QB room, I mean, it's funny. It's definitely like, you know, it's kind of like a gag almost, but then, you know, just looking at, you know, I watched one of his highlight tapes and seeing what some of his teammates and stuff were talking about and saying about him and everything, real positive things. Like, it seems like he's definitely an interesting addition to the room. And really, you know, this is also coming, we're going to get to it, I'm sure, but, you know, this room is starting to fill up a lot more than we're kind of used to. And mm-hmm. So, that's another part of it that was interesting to me, is that we're adding this guy in a room that's getting kind of crowded, not in a bad way either, but I'm kind of just trying to figure out where what the philosophy, I guess, behind it is.
And I think it's interesting because we're seeing Oklahoma use the JUCO. I mean, the transfer portal has really, really, really messed things up as far as what recruiting cycles look like for JUCO kids, even for high school kids, because, you know, you can go get a JUCO guy right out of the portal, or not a JUCO guy, but you can go get a guy right out of the portal after his freshman season if he's not happy. And so it's been really kind of interesting to see teams navigate that. So I was very surprised to see a JUCO guy pop up instead of a transfer, despite Oklahoma getting another transfer. And so, Steven, I know this was a thing. I mean, like, I know, like, so, like, J.J. Hester from Mizzou, 6'4", has, like, 3 years left of eligibility. He's a guy that totally fits Jeff Levy's offense. He's from Booker T. You love to see OU actually finally going back and getting in good ties with Booker T, especially with Gentry Williams also coming in the summer. But looking at the wide receiver room, if Oklahoma only has a certain amount of scholarships to give out, in your opinion, why would Oklahoma, and of course, I'm obviously not Brent Venables. Why would you think Oklahoma would prioritize another quarterback after getting Davis Bevel over somebody like Bunkley from Arizona State that would probably become your immediate two wide receiver?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question for sure. And, you know, I'm not inside Brent Venables' head or anything, but, you look at the quarterback room and just kind of what we saw depth wise during the spring game, there's quite a bit of drop off between Dylan Gabriel and Nick Evers and Ben Davis or something like that?
Yeah, Ben Davis.
That's an immediate concern because if Gabriel goes down, your season is probably going down with him. They add Beville, and maybe he's not going to be enough. So General Booty's a guy that I don't think a lot of people love at the moment, but his tape does. He just shows some flashes. Great ball placement. Throwing motion's a little bit weird, but he's a guy that, you know, has a little bit of moxie to him here and there. So I can see them wanting to prioritize some guy that could be a more of a safety net than a guy like Bunkley, who is going to join a wide receiver room who doesn't have a lot of upside or a lot of talent, a lot of proven talent. But they have some possibilities there with like Farouk, Theo Weiss is coming back, Drake Stoops. So there's some pieces there that you like, that you might not love, but behind Gabriel, there's a lot of pieces you just don't love at the moment.
Yeah. And looking at Pitt, like, I mean, they've lost like all their quarterbacks this offseason, to transfer or to the draft. And OU ends up with Davis Beville. He's 6'6". He actually played in a bowl game against Michigan State where Pickett opted out, went like 14-19, had a couple touchdown passes, looked like a competent quarterback somewhat. I mean, like, so like that makes you feel a little bit happier inside knowing that he's a guy that you can, you know, just kind of throw in there and like basically just hand the ball off or make an out route if you needed to. Or in this offense, it's very QB friendly. I mean, are you throwing a go route? Are you throwing a bubble screen? Are you throwing a tunnel screen? Or are you just handing it off? I mean, that's realistically what this offense kind of is. The route tree is very simplistic. And so what do you guys, what's your take? And Steven, I'm going to come back to you. What's your take on Davis Beville?
I haven't watched a ton of Davis Beville. Obviously, the first thing that stands out is he's a 6'6 quarterback, which I don't think Oklahoma's had since, what, Blake Bell-ish?
Yeah, somewhere he's, on there. He's so big.
He's a guy that is going to stand out quite a bit in the QB room. And if he ever gets in a game, he's not going to look like Kyler. He's not going to look like Baker. He is going to be a stand tall in the pocket passer that, you know, he's made some throws. He's not bad, but, you know, you kind of look that you might have a little bit of a limited upside. So maybe with him in the game, you do a lot more run with maybe some quick strikes over the middle.
And Seth, you alluded to this earlier. This quarterback room, they are seven dudes deep, right? Like they have Gabriel, Beville, Bowens, Booty, Evers, Rucker, Davis, and they have Arnold committed. So they have eight guys right now, and you have Gabriel with still like a few years of eligibility remaining. Of course, I think Rucker's gonna end up obviously graduating. Maybe, I don't know, it might be like a Brian Mead guy that stays there for about 10 years. But like this room is huge. Whereas during the Lincoln and Riley era, that room was relatively small, like four guys, and that was about it. You had your two scholarship guys, maybe three, but mostly two scholarship guys and a couple of walk-ons, and one in which that would probably end up earning a scholarship. Why do you think there's such a night-and-day difference between how Levy's going to operate that quarterback room in comparison to Lincoln Riley?
That's a good question, especially because, you know, you mentioned that this offense is very QB-friendly. But I think that probably also plays into this kind of strategy of just filling up the room to the brim because, you know, you can get all these guys with all these different skill sets and they could probably all run the offense at least to some degree, effectively. And just to the touch on Davis Beville, I went back and watched some of his throws against, was it Michigan State in the bowl game? And it looked like a lot of his targets were to, was it Addison, the Blitnikoff bit. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like, I don't know if it was like, I almost felt like I was watching, what's the Garrett Gilbert against Alabama. And all his throws were to Shipley. So it's like, yeah, it looked like he was flashing, but then again, he was thrown to a guy that will catch anything. So the jury is still out for sure on pretty much everybody in that room for me, other than Gabriel. But yeah, I don't know. Like it, I'm really not too familiar with if this is like a very common thing with Lebby, as far as like what all his QB rooms have looked like. Mm-hmm. But I imagine that if it is, it's played well for him, and that's why he's continuing to bring it here. And also just, I think part of it is because there are no real proven guys, at least from last year's team, on this team. So it's just kind of like, well, we're just going to get as many, not just bodies, but, you know, guys that have done it or done some things, and we're just going to see what they can do. And it's just going to be kind of this wide open competition for two.
Yeah, and Steven, what's your take on that too? Like, for example, because like, I mean, like Lincoln Riley to me, he would have like four quarterbacks, and then he added Bowens for like depth and just like emergency depth, right? And to me, it's just like he expected his quarterbacks to be in the NFL draft by their redshirt sophomore year, by their third year on campus. And I don't think that maybe is the thought process behind Lebby. Could that contribute to this quarterback room being this big, or am I just thinking outside the box here?
It might be a little bit outside the box. I think the thing with Lincoln, they were kind of continuing to learn that he liked his quarterback room pretty structured. He wanted the hierarchy pretty there wasn't a lot to think about, because you had Baker, obviously the next guy up is Kyler, next guy up is Spencer, or Jalen, then Spencer. So I don't think he liked a lot of question marks, or I don't think he could handle a lot of question marks or the drama that comes with it with a real quarterback competition. Whereas with Lebby and especially Venables, I think they're pretty weathered. I don't think they let the drama really get to him too much.
The drama got to the players, according to the players, so in the quarterback room, from both Caleb and Spencer, if we're being honest. Like, they both spoke out about it, like how toxic it was. And
you
like,
could see, like immediately, they just did not talk to each other, like in spring games.
Oh, they fucking hated each other.
In summer workouts, they were never near each other, and that was just kind of something we always noticed.
They hated each other, and it's like at first I thought it was just a competitive thing. And nah, especially once Caleb got that job, they hated each other. There's so much resentment. And like, that's why Lincoln's first text to Spencer Rattler was basically like, you up, right? And Spencer was like, nah, I'm going the opposite direction. And that's what it was. Like, and because like he felt some type of way about it because of the toxicity in the locker room, despite, you know, some of those players following him over to USC. Talking about toxicity within that, so whatever. And a commitment has happened. Caleb Spencer, a guy that's been like, this guy hasn't been as long-witted to commit to OU as Dylan Edwards has at running back, that OU's basically just still waiting on to take his visits, which is gonna happen pretty soon in June. And he's a three-star guy. Not many people are talking about it, despite him having some impressive offers. Just go look at his offer sheet. He's got some good offers, and he's going into his senior year. He's going to get more. He's 6'3", 200 pounds. This is like, is this not like the perfect cheetah position guy that Brent Venables is trying to put in this offense as a guy that's going to be like a linebacker safety hybrid that kind of just roams around the defense?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of just nailed it on the head right there. I mean, Caleb Spencer, 6'3", 200 pounds, a guy that can really move, a guy that can play pretty physical, if we're being honest. So he kind of fits that. I don't want to say Isaiah Simmons, because Isaiah Simmons was a very special player, but he fits that role as a guy that can kind of be that hybrid safety, hybrid linebacker, kind of like a utility tool guy for Brent Venables.
And Seth, to that point, what I think is intriguing, and tell me what you think about this, because everybody always suggests it's always about stars, and we can look at the NFL draft, and we can see, yes, it is about stars. The people that are getting drafted are the ones that usually have the 4 stars and 5 stars by their names. But what Clemson has done, because Clemson, when they were winning national titles, their blue chip ratio was the exact same or very, very near what Oklahoma's was, which was far down from what Alabama's was, Georgia's was, and you other couple other teams. Their blue chip ratio was the same as Oklahoma. So what does that suggest about what Brent Venables was doing on his defense to keep them number one however many years in a row, despite not recruiting those four and five star guys until later on in his career at Clemson?
Well, to me, it just seems like from this outside perspective I've got, it seems like they really took on the personality of their coach, of their defensive coordinator, and Brent Venables, and it just seems like for whatever reason he's figured out how to kind of instill his energy and his kind of mentality is just 100 miles an hour in his players. And then when they are, if they're at a Clemson, they're at an Oklahoma, and they were, you know, they know that they were a three-star guy. They just get that chip on their shoulder. And then to combine that with a coach that's going to get that kind of level of play and consistency out of them, or at least strive to do everything they can to get that. I think that's what we've seen. And then, yeah, it helps at Clemson when they have those three-star guys that are kind of playing above their original billing, that they're playing next to guys who were five stars and are playing out like five stars. So then it just kind of was like a very mutually beneficial kind of experience over there. And I think that's what he's trying to recreate here as well.
Steven, what do you think?
Yeah, I think what Brent Venables is doing, at least in the short term, is finding guys that fit not only just what he wants to do on the field, but he's going to fit into the culture of the program and kind of build that culture early on for him. So a guy like Caleb Spencer, not the highest rated guy, but they've all obviously seen something on his tape and seen something in person that they just really like and they have to have. So I don't think this is the end of just recruiting like four and five star athletes. I think that's going to come eventually, but in the short term, and especially right now with NIL and how recruiting's going and everything's taking a little bit longer, a guy like Caleb Spencer is, you know, a piece that they have to have. They have to have someone that can build this class around, a guy that can be on campus, especially like during the barbecue, a guy that can relate to other players, recruit for them. So I don't think Caleb Spencer is going to be on the same level as Caleb was, but he's a guy that can show up, let's say, in June at the barbecue and say, hey, this is what I really like about this program. These are the coaches. Let me introduce you here and here and here. So I really like the pickup. I don't think it's the end of the four and five star athletes at Oklahoma by any means, but you'll take a guy that's going to build your culture up immediately, like any day of the week.
And speaking of building a culture, Oklahoma is consistently building a culture of more tight ends. I mean, my God, Oklahoma's after tight end Reed Mikeska, who was once a very, very, very heavily leaning Clemson at a tight end who played a lot of wide receiver and H-back in high school, but he'll be used at tight end. Man, it's going to be weird to see Oklahoma in dual tight end sets this in the coming years under the Jeff Lebby offense. Like, they'll either be really compact in or really spread out to the boundaries. It's so odd to think about that type of Oklahoma offense when we haven't seen that kind of offense in a very, very long time. We're really at OU in general. I mean, like, that's not what they've been doing for like the longest time. You go from what, Riley, Heupel didn't really use tight ends. You had Kevin Wilson, you had Chuck Long, all those dudes. You never kind of saw those sets that you're about to see out of Jeff Levy's offense. And so, Steven, you follow recruiting a lot closer than I am. What would Oklahoma be getting out of Mikeska?
Yeah, he's an interesting prospect, not just because he was the mystery visitor for, what was it, a week when that story went on, and everyone's kind of thinking maybe it's a five-star, and it turns out to be this three-star tight end that's committed to Clemson, which on the flip side, you think, you know, Brent Venables is just kind of snaking Dabo immediately after having that little truce in 2022. But, you know, Reed looks like a guy that he's probably going to be that inline tight end, at least early on. I don't think they're going to flex him out as that tight end H, but I think they'll run him in line. I think maybe his future is more as a tackle as he grows into his body. So I don't know if this is going to be a full-on tight end commitment or if they're taking him as a tight end, but just kind of assuming he's going to grow into a tackle eventually.
That's possible.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
This episode is sponsored by State Farm. Buying insurance can be complicated, and you might have a lot of questions, like, what if my policy doesn't cover that? Or, what if I need to make a claim in the middle of the night? Good news, State Farm is there for all your what-ifs. You can reach them 24/7, talk through any questions with your agent, and you can even file a claim on the State Farm mobile app. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com to get a quote today.
Let's go ahead and switch up sports a little bit. Something that is a little bit more prevalent right now. Let's go to softball. Starting off with something with news that we already knew was going to happen, but officially came down the pipes today, actually, conveniently within hours. Donahue from Mustang, Oklahoma is done at OU. She posted on her Instagram, said that eventually one day she's going to get the story straight. So there seems like some pretty interesting comments that she would want to reveal later on after being replaced by, it's the number one seed in the, whatever. Donahue's done at OU. Seth, what's your instant reaction? Because like already like get everything there. You have like the whole Jordan kind of like, you know, silhouettes that she made in the College World Series. Donahue at OU, no longer. Does that affect, that's really affecting it right now, but in the future, how big of that is a blow?
It could be, you know, it would have been really nice to have Donahue in 2023 and beyond. I think she has 2 years left, I believe, after this season. So maybe three. I don't know if this season is going to count for her. But anyways, it would have been nice to have her for depth purposes. And also because so at her position out there in left field now is Alyssa Brito, who's completely locked it down and has looked like a stud. But with, you know, there's going to be some turnover in the infield. You know, Jana Johns is going to move from third base, and there's talks of Brito moving to third, which would have that left field spot open again next year if that happens, and Donahue could have competed for it or just taken it. So it kind of hurts in that way. OU will probably short something like that up through the portal anyways, but I mean, as far as what she showed on the field this season in her brief kind of time before she walked was away from the team and now no longer on the team. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just in her head or something after that huge World Series that she had. Like you said, she was like, you know, her silhouette was everywhere. That catch was being replayed all over the place. And she had a couple catches like that. And it's just, she wasn't the same player. At least not on the field as she was last June. So it's kind of a bummer. And I'm interested. I hope she sets the record straight just so I can hear more of the story. But I don't think it's anything where, well, you know, I think people already have their kind of opinions and their kind of takes on it. And for whatever it is, honestly, I do hope the best for her, like for sure, wherever she ends up. And I think wherever she ends up, she'll make that team a better team.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate because, like you said, I mean, gosh, she had so many pivotal moments in the College World Series, not just like catching, you know, like balls out in left field and making really awesome grabs near the wall. clutch home runs. I mean, like, she did it all. And maybe that's part of the reason why there were whispers early in the beginning of the season after Brito decided to transfer to OU that there was a lot of unhappiness going on there, because maybe she felt like she had locked it down. Or I don't know, she has her story to tell. There's several different perspectives on these things. So I think it's really interesting. And it just, of course, it came down the pipes today. Hey, you know, I'm leaving. I'll tell the story one day. Right now is not appropriate. It's pretty much what I got from that. But kind of shifting over, Steven, we talked about this pre-pod a little bit. Not going to go into much detail about it, but OU softball could possibly have a injury. It's a significant injury, maybe, with Jordy Ball. I mean, we don't know the severity of it. That's why I don't want to go into the specifics of it. Oklahoma doesn't have Jordy Ball. How far can they go into the Women's College World Series, you think? Do you still think they have a shot at the title?
Yeah, they have a shot at the title. As long as Patty Gass is your coach. I mean, I don't know a lot about softball. I don't watch a ton of softball, but Patty Gass is the kind of coach where she's going to figure it out. She has enough personnel there where she can tweak and scheme and plan for games and push this team farther than they think. So, you know, maybe they'll lose Jordy Ball for the season. Who knows? That's yet to be determined. But, you know, if they do, you have to believe that Patty Gasso
we can is going to figure it out. Patty Ball. Patty, no, we can start ball. Calling it Patty Ball. Yeah, I enjoy that. Better watch some Patty Ball.
We'll start the hashtag.
Well, we will.
But there's no reason to doubt Patty Gasso or Patty Ball.
That's true. Never doubt Patty Ball. Seth, so I know Troutwine has been nails for the majority of the season, but recently, specifically against, you know, higher ranked teams like Texas, like Oklahoma State, a couple times, as we saw, her rise ball, what kind of like is her pitch, it's her go-to pitch, has kind of really gotten out of hand. And your two pitchers are really going to be on deck, are going to be Troutwine and Nicole May, that you saw Nicole May come in freshman spots and really play some clutch softball. I mean, that was just what it was. How far can they go? I know they're the number one seed, so they're going to get the easiest way into the College World Series, but how far can they go with Troutwine and Nicole May? Do you think they could end up in the national title and competing for that? Or do you think with the lack of Jordy Ball and what she brings to the table as of now, I'm not saying she's out, but if she is out, you think they could still win that?
Yeah, I think in a word, yes, I think they can still make it definitely to the national championship series and win it all, honestly. But if Jordy Ball isn't able to return at all the rest of this postseason, it's going to be a lot harder. Just there's no way around it. And like you said, Hope, Troutwine, she's been great all year, but yeah, these last couple appearances we've seen her, especially, you know, Oklahoma State, she started two of those games, and going back to the series and did the Big 12 tournament, and it wasn't always the best we've seen her. And so to combine that with Nicole, who has had her ups and downs as well, both last year and this year, it'll be interesting. And I think this team is going to have to rely even more so on its offense, which they've been the best team offensively all year. They were the best team historically last year. But they're going to have to really pick that up, because these last few weeks, they've been playing a little bit under their averages as far as batting and then just runs period and all that. So the offense is just going to have to pick it up. Because there are some teams out there, they probably won't face them until OKC, but there are some teams out there that could go hit for hit with OU. And so if their pitching isn't on top of its game, then you're kind of asking for trouble if you're an OU fan.
And I was talking to a friend earlier about this. Where would you rank Troutwine among former OU pitchers? Like, for example, you've got Kehlani Ricketts, you've got both Pages, you've got Juarez. Like, where does she fit in this group? She's not in front of the Pages, in my opinion. Is she just behind Juarez, or what do you think about that? Because she's not in the middle of the bunch, and I don't think she's the top.
Yeah, no, definitely not at the top. Like you said, the two Pages and Ricketts are definitely up there in that top, probably three, honestly, as far as the last decade or so of OU pitchers. I would say when Hope is at the top of her game, she's right there with a really good G. Juarez. But I think G might have been a little bit more consistent. But that being said, Hope, she's got a little bit more heat. As far as like what she throws, she's really a strikeout kind of artist. She doesn't get a lot of ground outs necessarily, which Nicole May does. And that's just kind of her. She just kind of pitches to contact. But yeah, I'd say she's right there around that kind of G range. I'd probably, if G was on this team and Jordy was out, and it was between G, Hope, and Nicole, G is probably your ace still. Just ahead of Hope, but I think she's really kind of beckoning on that kind of level.
And so Steven and Seth, I need you to explain this to me. Why do I find softball in just softball in particular? Like, I'll find myself watching, like, sometimes not even OU softball games. Sometimes I'll watch other softball games, like UCLA games, you know, higher ranked teams that are obviously good teams. But why do I find it so easy to watch a softball game more so than I ever would a baseball game? Like, why is that a thing for me? Is that normal? Is that abnormal? What is going on?
Easy answer. Baseball just sucks.
that's definitely the quick and dirty answer. I was thinking about it because I agree with you, and I know a lot of people agree with that sentiment. And I went through and I really tried to break down why exactly. And I came up with a few things. So one really easy one that a lot of people point to, the game of softball is just faster pace. Mm-hmm. And just overall, the games are shorter. They're roughly 2 hours max, you know, and then if there's a run rule, it could be an hour and a half versus baseball, which you're pretty much locked in for 3+ hours. There's really no way it's going to be shorter than that in today's game. So that's one. Also, there are just a lot fewer stoppages in softball. Just, you know, the pitcher's not, you know, you'll never see a softball pitcher try to pick off the base runner at first. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and that happens how many times in baseball? Like,
it's a no nonsense sport.
Yeah. So there's none of that. There's not as many pitching changes as well. Like, you could see like six pitchers in a baseball game on one team alone throughout the course of it. And then also there's just typically it's a higher scoring game as well. There's a lot more easier ways to manufacture runs in softball versus baseball. You know, there's slap hitters in softball. And then just with the way the pitching goes, the pitching differences are between softball and baseball. There's like a higher chance that there's going to be a wild pitch in softball, which it's bad for the team that does it.
Interesting.
But if there's a base runner, they're moving up, so they're getting into scoring position a lot more often than in baseball because there are, I think, a higher percentage of wild pitches. So all of that kind of just adds up to there's more scoring, higher pace. It's just like there's like kind of action happening on like almost every pitch. There's like something happening on the field. So
yeah, like I noticed, like, I always felt like you said, it's more higher scoring, which means the ball is getting hit more often, and maybe the game was just, I don't know, just faster, easy, like faster paced. You don't have to have like several pitching changes. Actually, a lot of times you see the same pitcher pitch the entire game if it's not a relatively high pitch count. And so that, I thought that was interesting. Also, I just got a message. The injury to Jordy Ball is on her throwing arm. So that is, that's significant. So just want to mention that. I agree. And I always thought it's also always fun to watch softball because OU softball is really good. It's always.
I would also add fun that to the Purdue's are longer in softball and baseball, so that just makes it more fun to watch.
It's true.
Like, would you rather watch Baker? Or would you rather watch like Landry Jones? Landry Jones is baseball. Baker's softball.
It's true. It's true. You know, Danny Cannell, he doesn't like it when, you know, you celebrate after you score, you know, after you hit a double. I'm not a fan. It's not classy to celebrate.
When I tune into baseball, I just tune in for the fights.
Yeah. Same for hockey. You know, I'm just there.
I've learned to like hockey. I'm actually really enjoying hockey right now.
All those dudes don't even have the real
coming team. Around to it. Ever since I went to Phoenix, saw the worst team in the NHL.
Interesting. Well, I've got a game of true or false for you guys before we get out of here. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
All right, Seth, I'm coming to you first. OU football plays for the conference championship game this year.
True.
Steven?
I am also going true for that one.
I'm going to say true. Let's say OU wins the conference championship. Steven?
I'll also go true on that. I think they win it.
Seth?
I'll say false, just for the old reverse psychology. Even though that now that I said that, it will be false.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna go false too. I know like all the odds makers already have OU as the favorite. I mean, even like Texas people that I really trust, they're like OU's the favorite until they don't win it. You just have to expect it every year because it's Oklahoma. Which is something that I kind of respect. All right, true or false? Steven, I'm going to start with you. OU has at least 5 guys named to all Big 12 teams in football after the season is over. And this counts second teamers as well. Over 5.
I'll go true on that because I think Turk's going to get in so that you don't really account for that one. I think they'll have a couple second teamers. I think Dylan Gabriel has a shot. Eric Gray has a shot. And then Danny Stutzman. So I'm probably over 5. So I'll go true.
What about you, Seth?
I'll say true as well. And I'll actually add, I think I've got 5 guys who I'm going to go ahead and say they will be first teamers. So
all right. Now
Gabriel, Mims, Turk, Hunter, Billy Bowman. That's probably my most out on the limb.
Wow. You went on a limb.
Yeah. And Woody Washington.
That's exciting. Oh, that's interesting. Oklahoma having legitimate defensive backs. It's been a long time coming, you know, and they could be really special this year. Like they're really high end Kenai Walker. I thought his name was Connie Walker until I heard them say his name. I was very surprised. Like, were you guys expecting it to be his name to be pronounced Kenai?
I was thinking it was Connie, but I'm also from Oklahoma.
That's fair. So. That's fair. I thought it was Connie. So like when they said Kenai, I was going through the roster and they had the pronunciations. I was like, this is wrong. Like you guys don't know how to do this, but no. Yeah. All right. So, all right, true or false, and we kind of mentioned this earlier. We kind of actually talked about this, but let's go full season. Let's go full season outlook. Seth, OU struggles on defense this year.
Struggles on defense?
With the full picture in view.
Right. And I don't want to cop out and be like, it'll be kind of just a neutral. So I'll say true. As much as it kind of pains me, I think just in terms of that, like that standard that people want it to be at, that, you know, we all want to see the defense at, I think they're going to struggle. Just the learning curve.
Steven, about you?
I'll also go with true just because I don't think you're going to see a defense that's going to be a full product that it will be in, you know, 2 or 3 seasons from now.
I'm also going to go true. I think. This year, you'll see a noticeable difference in obviously what they're doing, and you'll see more explosive plays that are being attacked from the opposition just because Oklahoma is going to be blitzing quite a bit. I think, like we mentioned earlier, And so I think, of course, that was Brent's. That was like his whole death knell, right? At Oklahoma. Oh, he gives up too many big plays because he blitzes so much. And then he goes to Clemson and then, you know, has several first rounders and wins several national titles. So that must be nice. So I'm also going to go true just with the idea in mind that they're still learning and the growth curve is rather steep. That learning curve of that growth anyways. All right. How about this one, Steven? OU narrowly escapes and beats Nebraska and Lincoln this year. Is that true or false?
That's been a conversation going for like 2 weeks now. Mm-hmm. Did someone put something out there about that? Like a prediction or is it FanDuel had like a favorite on him?
I don't know. I think I don't remember. I know we talked about it with Chisholm.
Right. I don't know. I'm going to say false though. I don't. And this is not because I think Oklahoma's more talented. They are more talented, but I think Brent Venables is just a better coach than Scott Frost. Like Scott Frost just can't get it together.
That's fair. Seth, what do you think?
I'm not betting on Scott Frost for anything.
Yeah, I'll say false as well. I think OU wins by two scores.
Two scores is fair. And I don't think this is the type of Oklahoma team that Nebraska is going to be able to actually keep the rock away from. I think this team is going to be far more physical. I mean, like you saw Nebraska come in there into Norman and just beat the hell out of OU in their defense. And they couldn't do anything. Nebraska kept on getting into third and shorts and kept that offense on the side. And their defensive line was more than enough to keep OU at bay and almost win the darn freaking game. So let me go. I'll go false on this one, and I'll go with Seth. I'll say about 10 points. Two scores seems about right here, especially up in Lincoln. All right, let's say OU jumps the SEC. True or false? Seth, I'm coming to you. OU football is in the conference championship game in the SEC within their first 5 to 6 years of being in that conference.
True.
And let's assume they're doing the pods, because right, I think the divisions are out the conversation now.
Yeah, I'll say true. Now, if you said 3 to 4 years, I'd probably go false. But 5 to 6, I'll say true.
Mm, why? Why the difference?
I'm just banking on Father Time finally taking down Nick Saban. That's what it comes down to. And also, though, if they do the pods, it's going to probably make that a little easier or feasible to get to like a championship kind of game. But yeah, I think Nick Saban and really there's a couple teams in there, but I just think that kind of once that bear is finally out of the way, there might be some other dominoes that fall, and maybe Venables is the guy to kind of at least if not take over, you know, gain some ground.
Steven, what about you?
I would say true. I think they'll get there one of the 5 years. I think they're going to have enough talent. They'll get some boost recruiting-wise from just not only NIL, but also the upcoming facilities upgrades. If they keep their core coaching core intact, I think they'll do pretty well. So I'm not worried. I think they'll make the championship game. I'm not going to say as far as they're going to win it, but I think they'll make it there.
Yeah, that's the kind of the key phrasing there, right? Is that they're in the conference championship game, not necessarily winning that conference championship game. And I've been thinking about that thing. I've been thinking about that for like the last like 3-4 years, Seth. Like, is when is Nick Saban going to finally leave Alabama? Because like he went to LSU, and I always remember in the back of my brain that 2003 season that the LSU kept on rising through the ranks, and they're like, yeah, like it's really, this LSU team is really, really fun under under Nick Saban. Like they're doing well again. And then like, OU meets Nick Saban, that national title game, obviously loses. He goes to the Dolphins. The players are like, he's too cold and cruel as a coach. So he goes back to college football and takes over an awful Alabama team and then turns them into what this monster powerhouse that they are today. I struggled with this question for a while, just kind of acknowledging that yes, the SEC, they're going to be doing pods, it's probably going to be actually a lot more beneficial for them to do pods, because 1 year you might get your own pod, and it depends on what the pods are, because I want to know if it's going to be OU, Texas, Arkansas, and Mizzou, or OU, Texas, Arkansas, and A&M. It's got to be one of those two, it feels like, or something along those lines. And there are going to be some years where you're going to get a pod that's complete shit with Vanderbilt in it. Like, it's just going to happen. And so, like, I went back and forth on this for a while, and I accepted. I was like, okay, I think OU by year five or six can certainly be in that conference championship game, but within this first maybe 3 or 4 years, be in that conversation. They're just not operating at the level A&M is as far as recruiting or paying, whatever you want to say, right now. But you know, they'll get there. And so, going on to this next one, because we have a couple more left. We just talked about this. Steven, true or false, OU softball wins a national title this year?
Man, it's going to look bad if I say false now, after saying all the stuff about Patty. So I'll go true. I'll go true there for continuity's sake.
Seth?
I'll say true as well. But if Jordy doesn't come back, I think they're going to have to go through the losers bracket again like they did last year.
Yeah, I think it's false because of that. I think they'll catch a game where their bats aren't hot, and that they're not going to pitch to Jocelyn Allo, and I think that they're going to end up not winning it. I think they may make it to the national title, but I don't know if they actually win that, because your offense can only travel so far. Whereas, I mean, Oklahoma, don't get me wrong, has been nails on defense as well. But man, pitching is so integral to winning a College World Series. All right, this next one, I'm coming to you, Seth, first. Patty Gasso stays at OU for no more and no longer than 3 or 4 years into the future. So her tenure at OU will be up in 4 years, true or false?
False. I think she's got a solid 10 years left. I think.
Wow.
Because this is what I think her 27th or 28th season. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of coaches out there. I think Michigan's coach right now is in her like 35th or something. And there's a lot of coaches that have been well into the 30s. So I think as long as she's got this program humming like it is right now, which it's going to stay this way for at least the foreseeable future, I think she's going to want to stick around for at least until 2032.
That's interesting. And Steven, you agree?
I do agree. I think NIL will play a little bit, but I don't really see NIL kind of hitting the gas pedal for Patty. I think once they get the new stadium in, they're going to get a couple more practice facility upgrades. I think it's going to keep her going. I think she's having fun playing or coaching right now. So I don't see her really quitting after 3 or 4 years.
It's fun to coach a team that only loses twice during the regular season and that just beats the hell out of everybody else. Yeah.
It's less stressful.
God, it's talking about a move. The move for OU to the SEC is going to be really awesome softball matchups for Patty Gasso and them. And that might be another reason why she would stick around too, is that there's new competition, and hell, shit, there's better teams in the SEC instead of like your two teams in the Big 12 that are Texas and Oklahoma State that are really just one of them really just going to challenge you. Texas, they got that one and they acted like they won the World Series. So there's that. All right. Last question, Seth, true or false? Brent Venables is that coach that's going to bring you that 8th national title.
True. Brent's my guy. I don't know when it's going to happen. I really hope if it doesn't happen in the next 5 years, I really hope fans don't get too restless, because I do think he's going to have this program, you know, in a place where it can solidly contend. And if given enough time, I think he'll do it.
Steven, what do you think?
Y'all go true as well. I was a little bit skeptical at first with the hire, but just seeing how he's built this program up in such a short period of time, bringing in Thad Turnipseed, bringing in the coaches he did, Obviously, he's got a few championships under his belt as defensive coordinator. So I think they know the blueprint. Him and Thad know the blueprint to winning. Obviously, being at Alabama for Thad and then Clemson for both of them, they're going to bring one to Oklahoma eventually.
I went back and forth on this quite a bit. I mean, like, I really, really, really like Brent as a coach. Brent is not that player's coach that people think of. Like, he's not like buddy with the coach, with the players. He certainly is certainly a mentor figure. He is a guy that's very relational, a guy that really wants to know who you are as a person and even more so as a player as well, and how to make you better as a player. That's like his entire thing. I don't know how good of a head coach he's going to be. Of course, this year will tell us a lot of things, and I think next year will tell us a lot more than this year, because this year is kind of your transition year. And so, like, your first year, really looking at Brent Venables is going to be in the SEC most likely, which is like maybe not the best of lenses to look through to judge a head coach's performance. But I do think he ends up winning a national title. It just sometimes makes me a little sad to see like Brent Venables now and like people when they bring back images of Brent Venables before he left, because he just looks so much more weathered, because his face is like more like, you know, he's gotten older. Like, that face is no longer soft anymore, homie. That's just straight jawline and just being in the sun all day. That's all that is. But I think he has the staff around him. I think he knows obviously he knows what he needs to do to have a national title winning team. He's been on a few of them, and he's been on teams that have made it to the national title even more so. And so he knows what those types of teams look like. And I think he's operating with those personnel that he needs. He took guys from Clemson that he wanted those personnel too, including Thad Turnipseed, that is getting stuff done at OU in particular. I think he wins one. I don't know when, but you know, it's got to be relatively within the next 10 years, I think. And like to Seth's point, man, if he does not do something soon, like something like substantial soon, I really hope fans are not up in arms if they end up winning 10 or 11 games and are just like, you know what, we're tired of winning 10 or 11 games, and ditch them for Gary Gibbs and then ditch them for whoever else down the pipe, because they're more proven in their past 10 years as coaches. But I digress. I don't think Brent Venables is that type of guy or that type of coach. But anyways, Seth, thanks for just like hopping on the I just like asked you at like 10:30 at night and was like, hey, do you want to be on the podcast on Tuesday? And he's like, yeah, like totally, definitely. Thanks for joining the pod. Tell everybody where they can find you, where they can follow you, anything else.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely appreciate asking me to do this, because I'm always down to talk OU sports just in general. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter. That's really where I hang out as far as social media goes, at Seth Olivares. And for the next, starting today, now that I'm officially on summer break, it's going to be straight softball talking. And it's just going to be a good time, you know, win or lose. It's we're going to talk softball and we're going to have fun with it.
Yeah. And man, I'm excited. I'm excited despite the news that I've been getting, but I'm trusting in Patty. I mean, like, if Patty Gasso can win a national title playing the short game, Patty Gasso can win a national title playing any type of game. That's kind of where I'm going off of. Steven, you have anything else with the pod?
Join Discord. Discord's a lot of fun. We talked about this week's mystery visitor, which ended up being Reed Mikeska, whatever, however you say that name. So
I think I said a lot of recruiting talk. I butchered it earlier.
You got me self-conscious about saying it now.
Yeah, I know.
So we talk about mystery visitors all the time. It's a great place to be. It's also free.
It is free. Yeah, free. I like free things. You know, free things are nice, but. Hey guys, go ahead and follow us on CrimsonCreamMachine.com. You can follow us on Twitter at CC Machine. Like Seth said, you can follow Matt Seth Olivares. You can follow me at Cameron Robbie and CCM. You can follow Steven at OU Update SB. I'll drop the Discord link in the bio just below. If you guys wouldn't mind dropping us a 5-star rating, we'd really appreciate it. It makes us more visible to you guys and everybody else. And we'll check you guys later.